Good morning. This is NPR News. I'm Chris Farrell, in today for Carrie Miller. On Mondays, we look at the week in politics with Ken Ridden, the political junkie. And I think it's fair to say that week two of the Trump administration was a whirlwind. So I'm just going to give you a brief refresher to set up our conversation. So last Monday, a week ago, President Trump fired Acting Attorney General Sally Yates after she told lawyers not to enforce the president's executive order on travel bans. On Tuesday, the president put forth Judge Neil Gorsuch as his nominee to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court. On Wednesday, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn announced that Iran is being put on notice after testing a ballistic missile. Later, Trump signed two executive orders on finance. So one halting the implementation of a federal rule mandating that federal advisors act in the best interests of their clients, the so-called fiduciary standard or fiduciary rule. And the other called for reviewing the Dodd-Frank regulations that were put in place after the 2008 financial crisis. So, Ken, what I want to start out with is this travel ban. Friday night, a federal judge in Washington State, he halted the president's travel ban in appeals court, refused to immediately reinstate the ban later in the weekend. And now we're seeing that this political court battle is going to continue. But looking at Washington, D.C., one of the repercussions of this has been the president's reaction calling the so-called judge. And his attacks on the judge seem to be backfiring, or are they backfiring?
Well, good morning. My God, that's the biggest introduction I've ever heard.
I know. Well, you know, there's so much to be to discuss.
You forgot the biggest story at all, Melissa McCarthy being Sean Spicer on Saturday Night Live. That was
that was incredible. That was absolutely incredible.
And I feel bad that Carrie Miller is not here. Is she affected by the travel ban? Because, you know, they lifted it, so maybe she can come back into the country. But more importantly, you know, something we heard during the newscast about presidents in the past have criticized the judiciary. And of course they have. Remember during one of President Obama's State of the Union messages, he criticized the Citizens United decision. And you can see Justice Alito just shaking his head no. But to call a judge a so-called judge and to say, if something terrible happens, let's blame him.
Right.
It's vintage Donald Trump. And it is tremendous blowback, not just from liberals and Democrats in the media, but Republicans too. Republicans say you're taking a step too far. Look, if the Republican Congress is not going to stand up to Donald Trump, if Donald Trump needs standing up to, then the judiciary is our only hope. And if the attacks on the judiciary seems to forget about separation of powers, I think the argument would be that he's gone too far.
So, well, what are the implications for the Supreme Court nominee? Because this is just happening, you know, the same week that he unveiled his nominee for the Supreme Court. They're doing the courtesy visits. They're starting the campaign to get Neil Gorsuch approved. And then all of a sudden you have this attack on the judiciary.
Well, look, I don't think it changed anybody's minds about the qualifications of Neil Gorsuch. I mean, I think the feeling is that, yes, he is qualified, but more importantly for the Democrats, given what happened to Merrick Garland and the way that the Republicans treated him, President Obama's nominee to replace Scalia, the Democrats almost, perhaps unanimously, meaning 48 votes, will vote against him. Now, of course, the only thing that's left for a filibuster to take effect is Supreme Court nominations. And which means you may need 60 votes to push the Gorsuch through. Given the fact that Donald Trump is demanding fealty from so many of his judges, remember last year he attacked the so-called Mexican judge
right.
In the Trump University trial, and now this judge as a so-called judge. There will be a lot of questions during the Gorsuch confirmation hearing saying, are you truly independent? Now, Gorsuch has shown independence in the past. I think he's unfortunately in a position right now that he has to talk about his separation from Donald Trump. But it's a question Democrats will ask. Now, the real question, of course, is whether Democrats will intend to filibuster the nomination. If they do, then Mitch McConnell may decide to change the rules once again, like Harry Reid did 3 years ago, and get rid of all of the filibusters with an R,
right.
Which means that Gorsuch would be confirmed with a majority vote.
And you think that's going to happen?
It could happen. I mean, when Harry Reid got rid of the filibuster 3 years ago, Mitch McConnell said it's going to come back to bite you, the Democrats, and it has, because now the Democrats can't put a filibuster on Betsy DeVos or Jeff Sessions or any of the more controversial cabinet nominations. McConnell is a strict defender of the rules of the Senate. But again, if the Democrats play hardball with a filibuster, you know there's going to be tremendous pressure from Trump and other top leading Republicans to change the rules once again.
So what is your sense? How is this going over with Donald Trump's voters, with his base? I mean, with the ban, with all the activity, the Supreme Court nominee, is this going over well with his base?
I think it is. I've seen no evidence of people souring their view. The people who voted for Donald Trump souring their view. Donald Trump promised results from the beginning, and my goodness, he has delivered, mostly with executive actions. And of course, as a candidate, Donald Trump criticized Barack Obama for using all those executive actions. But then again, as a candidate, Barack Obama criticized George W. Bush for executive actions. I mean, it goes on and on and on. But the thing is that that everything he's done regarding trade, regarding pipeline oil deals, regarding affirmative action, immigration, this is what he promised he would do, and he's sticking by his word, and I see no evidence of his loss of support from his core base.
So one of the things that interests me is you're starting to see some stirrings from Silicon Valley, the high-tech community. They don't like the immigration ban. You had the head of Cargill, largest private business in the United States, global. Historically, management very quiet, but they've been coming out against the immigration ban and about some of the about the attacks on NAFTA. You're starting to see a little bit of a stirring in the business community. How significant do you think that is?
Well, that's a very good question, Chris, because I think as we saw in North Carolina with the so-called bathroom bill, as we saw in Indiana when Mike Pence was governor there and he had this religious freedom bill, once business starts talking about how it's poorly affecting the state, the state's economy, then lawmakers seem to back down. Now, Donald Trump is not the kind of guy who backs down from anything. He's never had to report to anything other than his father because he was the head of Trump Industries. So he's not used to, you know, getting second guessed. But there will be lawmakers if business starts to say that the travel ban, the immigration ban, the certain immigration policies adversely affect the economy, then you can see that maybe there'll be tremendous pressure on Republican lawmakers. And if Republican lawmakers can put pressure on Trump, then something is likely to happen. But right now, the Republicans seem to be more willing than most to say that, you know, something, he's a new president, we'll give him his day in court, so to speak, and let's see where it goes from that. But we did see that two Republicans, Susan Collins of Maine and Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, plan to vote against Betsy DeVos as education secretary tomorrow. Of course, if one more Republican joins that group, her nomination is defeated. But right now, it looks like a 50-50 tie, which means Mike Pence would break the tie.
Okay, now I want to jump to two things that really kind of surprised me, considering the election and the campaign and Trump coming into the presidency, is, you know, starting the process of we're going to go after the Dodd-Frank, the regulatory reform, the banking regulatory reform that came after the 2008 crisis. And then also we're going to delay the implementation of this fiduciary rule, which basically says, look, if you're a financial advisor and you're advising someone with their retirement savings money, their retirement savings plan, you have to put their interests first, which is a real shift in the industry. But, you know, hey, what's the problem there? And yet that's being delayed and Dodd-Frank being opened up.
Well, this is vintage Donald Trump. There's just too many regulations on government. I think that's why so many business leaders supported him. Forget about his rhetoric and his temperament and his outbursts. They feel that what Obama has done in the aftermath of the financial crisis or the financial breakdown of 2008-2009, they feel that all those regulations are stymieing business and keeping it from you know, it doing what it needs to do, which is making profits. Now, you mentioned the fiduciary law. There's also something that Donald Trump is talking about. There's a product, the product safety, usually, or like when medicine or products are released to the public, right, they're tested first before they're deemed to be available to the public. And Donald Trump is weakening that too. So all those regulations on business that consumers have demanded for decades, you know, to make sure they're safe, to make sure they work properly, and there are no adverse effects, both medically and economically, seem to be going by the wayside with all this dumping and lessening of regulations.
Okay, now let's shift to foreign affairs. So the president's meeting with the Japanese prime minister this week, later this week, going to discuss security, a lot of concerns about North Korea. He's had some contentious relations with his conversations overseas, particularly I'm thinking about Mexico and then with, I guess, really kind of the big surprise with the Australian prime minister.
That evil country, Australia.
Right, exactly. So Japan's a longtime ally. So what are your expectations from this conversation?
Expectation sounds like predictions, and it's impossible to predict what he's going to say. Look, he was asked yesterday about you know, Putin and the crime and the murders, and he says, well, there are murders in this country too. He seems more willing or less willing to criticize Putin and the Russian government than he is any of our allies, and to say that, well, you know, so whenever there's something like the Russian incursion into Ukraine or Crimea or any kind of Russian actions in Syria. Donald Trump seems to just brush by it, hanging up on the Australian prime minister because of something about immigration and driving the prime ministers of Britain and Germany, our long-held allies, over and over again. And, of course, you have Michael Kelly, the national security advisor, putting Iran on notice.
Yeah.
You know, the job of a president is to keep the world safe, to keep America safe. And there seems to be some kind of feeling in this side of this administration that saber rattling is the way to go. And of course, there are many people on both sides of the political aisle who said this is just madness.
So just in one more minute. So one of the things that really struck me odd about that conversation with Bill O'Reilly and the sort of moral equivalence between United States and Vladimir Putin is, you know, Trump doesn't seem to like the European Union values, and NATO. I mean, every once in a while he says something decent about NATO, but kind of doesn't like it. And yet every time he's given an opportunity to criticize Russia and Vladimir Putin, he doesn't take it up.
Exactly right. I mean, the fact is, during the campaign, he said that NATO, you know, the countries are not paying their fair share, and NATO is antiquated. He campaigned for Brexit. And as a matter of fact, I think when he was first elected, I think he said the first foreign leader he would invite to the U.S. is the nationalist secessionist leader of the United Kingdom. So look, he is a certain way with his politics, and it's not just Donald Trump. We're seeing this happen with Le Pen and all these new leaders emerging from countries around the world, that the foreign policy, the once trying to unite us against them, the democratic nations against totalitarian regimes, seem to be going by the wayside, and he seems to be picking and choosing, and sometimes who he's picking and choosing may not be the ideal democratic examples.
Well, we have to leave it there. We could go on. I'd love to talk some more, but thank you very much, Ken. It's been illuminating.